Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Room for Three by Ivy Fox. Narrated by Stephanie Rose and Aaron Shedlock. Prologue. Spencer. When my dad's beat-up truck pulls up to the main gate, my heart leaps in both relief and regret of him having to drive all the way to Phoenix to pick me up. Still, whatever guilt I may have, it doesn't deter me from jumping hurriedly to my feet, antsy to get the hell out of this shithole once and for all. The truck isn't even fully parked by the time I open the passenger door and throw my duffel bag in the back, begging my father to haul ass out of here. He lets out a little chuckle under his breath before putting the pedal to the metal and making my pathetic escape complete. I try to ignore the girls on the sidewalk throwing me the evil eye, but it's futile. My need to always have the last word gets the better of me in the end. I roll down the window just enough to give them the middle finger as my parting goodbye. Fuck them and their upturned noses. I know I'm in the right. But I guess that doesn't matter since, in the end, I was the one who was kicked out of the program. I stew in my seat, thinking of the opportunity I just screwed up by letting that bitch Roxy Donovan get in my head. I just couldn't keep my big mouth shut. But then again, it wasn't my lip that got me in trouble. It was my damned fists. Ugh. It's only when we drive over the Nevada state line hours later that I'm able to relax and breathe again. Thoughts of Roxy and those other girls no longer living rent-free in my mind.
How about some food, kiddo?
Dad asks, finally breaking our self-imposed silence.
You must be starving.
I could eat, I answer, leaning in and kissing his scruffy, bearded cheek. His silver eyes shine happily at me, guilt rearing its ugly head again at how they shine my way. In a couple of weeks, I'll start college at USC. If only I had known then what I know now, then maybe I would have stayed home with him and enjoyed our last summer together, instead of going to that wretched basketball boot camp. But I guess that's what people mean when they say hindsight is 20/20. I really thought that stupid place could teach me something worthwhile. How wrong I was. All they taught me is that narrow-minded people come in all ages, shapes, and sizes. Be it from the girls in the program to the coaches and staff that are paid to train and inspire us. Definitely not worth the $2,000 that I saved, working my butt off at Dad's garage all year. But live and learn, I guess. My sullen thoughts are interrupted when Dad pulls up to a roadhouse full of truckers, wide-eyed tourists, and waitresses with too much hairspray in their hair. The whole restaurant's decor is unapologetically loud and tacky, and I, for one, love it, since it means that I'm a stone's throw away from being home. Vegas is for the eccentric, after all. You want tame? Then don't come here. We're in your face and not shy about it. You either love us or you hate us, but trust me, you'll never forget us. Vegas is an acquired taste, and just like Sin City, I'm like her in more ways than one. Once we have our fill of cheeseburgers, curly fries, and ice-cold Cokes, Dad leans back into his seat and begins to give me the once-over. Now that I'm back on my own turf with my stomach full of delicious, greasy food, I decide to throw him a bone, especially since he must be dying to know why he had to close the garage early today to make the 5-hour drive to Phoenix. Go ahead and ask.
I thought camp was supposed to be fun.
Dad asks, getting to the heart of the problem. Don't call it camp, Dad. It makes me feel like I'm 10 or something.
Sorry. Basketball boot camp, then.
He shrugs as if the change in the title didn't make any difference. It does. Camp is for kids. Boot camp is for winners. Much better. I smirk at him. To me, camp is synonymous with swimming in lakes, telling horror stories over an open fire, and making s'mores while girls braid each other's hair and talk about boys or some nonsense like that. I've never been interested in attending anything remotely close to those camps in all my life. But basketball boot camps, like the one I just left, are a completely different ballgame. I've made my dad enlist me in as many as possible since I was old enough to go. The facility in Phoenix promised to be a non-stop training camp, starting as early as 5 a.m. We were all supposed to eat, live, and breathe basketball for 30 days straight, hence its appeal and the reason why I wanted so desperately to go in the first place. The program only offered 50 spots nationwide every year, and was extremely selective of who got those prized slots. Even with the $2,000 price tag that they requested for my basic needs and meals, I was ecstatic to have been chosen amongst the thousands of applicants they received this year. They said they couldn't wait to have me on board, and in turn, I couldn't wait for summer to begin and learn a few new tricks to up my game. Unfortunately, in my excitement, I forgot I would have to deal with 49 other girls competing for the same attention, one of which would end up being my all-time nemesis, Roxy Donovan. Not that I was surprised. Every camp I have ever attended, I could count on Roxy being there. Like a bad migraine that just won't go away, Roxy has been a pain in my ass since I was 8 years old. The only reprieve I ever got from her was school, since I lived in Vegas and she lived somewhere in Utah. Not to say there weren't plenty of mean girl replicas at my high school. Still, compared to Roxy, they were a walk in the park.
"What happened for them to kick you out?"
my father finally asks, placing his entwined fingers under his chin, offering me his full attention. "Kind of went nuclear on a girl?" I shrug nonchalantly, leaning back on the crimson leather seat.
"You're going to have to give me a little more than that, kiddo."
"Oh, same old, same old. She was acting like a royal bitch, and someone needed to bring her down a peg. Guess I just got lucky that I was the one who stepped up to do it."
"I see. Let me guess. Was this girl Roxy?"
I touch the tip of my nose to tell him he's right on the money.
"Of course it was her. I should have known. Couldn't you try to talk to a teacher this time or one of your coaches to sort her out instead?"
he asks diplomatically. I roll my eyes in response. Yeah, like I'd ever rat someone out, even a skank like her.
So what did she do this time? I know it wasn't anything she could have possibly said on the court. She's been talking smack to you since you were knee-high, and that has never made you lose your shit enough to get you out of your zone.
He rambles on, to which I nod proudly. Yep. While I'm inside the court, I don't hear anything but my own breathing. Oh, I tune in from time to time to toy with my competition, but I never let their words filter through my armor. Lead surrounds my frame, while my feather-light feet raise me high enough to get the ball through the almighty hoop.
Which leads me to assume that whatever Roxy did was done outside training hours. So, what did she do to earn my fierce daughter's wrath this time?
My father asks, with a glint in his eye. Showed me disrespect. I deadpan.
From what you tell me about your other teammates back in high school, that seems to be the consensus of every female you come in contact with. And you usually don't knock their lights out for it. Well, most of the time, anyway. What made this one so special?
She made a show of it in the locker room, making sure that everyone heard her cussing me out, all because I wiped the court with her ass. The prima donna couldn't take me showing her up. I mumble, crossing my arms across my chest, looking out the window.
What exactly did she say?
Started teasing me about the way I dress and whatnot, calling me white trash to lesbian all in one breath.
Those stupid labels never bothered you before,
he responds, trying to reason with me. Well, when 20 other girls start to chant the same thing, it kind of starts to irk you the wrong way, Dad. And she didn't call me butch like the rest of them back at school. The skank used the D word, like the small-minded bitch she is.
The skank, huh? Did you call her that before or after she called you the D word?
I don't remember. I groan.
Uh-huh. And then what happened?
I think I might have insinuated her daddy would do us all a public service if he started to wrap his shit up and never procreate again, with her being the end result of him screwing her mom and all. She pushed me, I pushed back, she slapped me, I broke her fucking nose. End of story. I shrug again as if it's no biggie.
Hence your immediate expulsion since you signed a no-violence/no-bullying clause.
My father lets out a sigh before ordering two cups of coffee from a passing waitress. Funny how she was the one who started the fight, yet I'm the one who got kicked out, huh? I'm sure it had nothing to do with the fact her daddy is some big-time sports lawyer.
From what the school told me over the phone, both of you were kicked out of the program. Didn't you know?
No, I didn't. I was alone in the coach's office when he gave me the boot, and it's not like I was going to stick around to know what her punishment would be for her role in the fight. Last time I saw Roxy, she was being taken to the nurse's office to stop her nose from bleeding. Whatever, I'm over it anyway. I wasn't learning anything new there. Those teachers were going on and on about my attitude like every other coach I've ever had. They didn't get me either, I add, leaning my head back, closing my eyes, and recalling how similar their rants were to my high school coaches. My father goes quiet for a few minutes while sipping his coffee. After his stagnant pause, he clears his throat, and I open my eyes, knowing this is his way of pulling my attention back to him.
Ever think that, if so many of these coaches are saying the same thing, maybe you should stop and listen to at least one of them? I mean, all of them say you have talent, right? All of them say you have what it takes to go all the way. And if coaching your own team is your dream, then sooner or later you have got to be a team player, kiddo.
Are you siding with them now, Dad? I snarl, but immediately regret my tone as shame hits me for the thought to even enter my head. My father has only ever sided with one person. Me. He is the only one who has my back, no matter what.
Never, Spence. I will always be in your corner. I just know how hard you've worked all your life, and I want you to succeed. Don't let any handicap that you may have hold you back from achieving your dreams, Slugger.
Slugger? I squint my eyes.
Too soon?
He teases, and we both start chuckling. Yeah, Dad. Too soon. Thanks for the ride, by the way. I tell him sincerely.
Anytime, kiddo. Good thing you already got into that fancy university, or this little event might have looked real bad on your application.
He lifts his brow in warning. Yeah, good thing. Don't know if USC would be too happy giving a full ride to such a dangerous menace.
I'd hardly classify you as dangerous, kiddo. Menace, on the other hand.
He begins to taunt, and I throw my napkin at his laughing form.
I'm teasing, Spence. But now that we're talking about college, do you know who you're rooming with yet?
Huh? No. I answer guiltily. I know I should have already contacted my soon-to-be roommates and touched base with them, but I've been too damn busy. And frankly, I'm not the social butterfly sitting at this table. Dad is a people person, a skill I didn't inherit from him, unfortunately. He rolls his eyes at me, a trait I did acquire from him, and puts on his worried dad face, the one I don't like seeing on him ever.
Sometimes I really do question if I did right by you. You know, most girls your age would have emailed or, I don't know, done something to get to know their roommate before the first day of class.
Dad, I think we've established already I'm not most girls. I play it off, trying to lighten the mood.
Don't I know it? I've raised a little hellhound,
he replies, but the tone of his words doesn't hold the teasing effect he intended them to have. True concern is too marred in them for either one of us to ignore. Another bout of silence ensues, and my stomach starts to get an uneasy feeling, prickling me from the inside, warning me Dad's about to get serious on me. There has only been a handful of times that my father has ever felt the need to really show me this level of worry. One of them was the day Mom left, and he told me it was just him and me from that point on. Another was the day I got my first period, and he gave me the talk about the birds and the bees, boys and contraception. Most of it went above my head, but at the time, I remember him being more nervous than me, so I knew I had to pay attention because it meant it was important to him. I see the same strain of worry in his gray eyes now, trying to find the right words to say, to guide me, and parent me as a good father would.
Spence?
Yeah, Dad?
Pay attention now to your old man, will you, kiddo?
We're gonna have one of our heart-to-heart talks now, aren't we? I jest, trying to ease his nerves, but he's too pent up as it is.
Yeah, kiddo. Something like that.
Dad, it's cool. I'm okay. I was over that place anyway. I explain, wondering if he's worried about me beating up Roxy and throwing away $2,000 in the process. I mean, if we want to split hairs about it, the program was going to end in 2 weeks' time anyway. To me, I consider this early parole. Instead of having only a weekend to spend with my dad before going to college, I get 2 full weeks. If you think about it, me knocking the teeth out of the bimbo's mouth is a godsend. It's a win-win as far as I'm concerned.
Spencer, just hear me out, okay?
He insists. Fine, I relent, slumping my shoulders in defeat.
You ain't a kid anymore.
He starts off.
You're about to become a college student, something no one in our family has ever been able to accomplish. You worked your ass off, and now you're reaping the benefits. Even got a scholarship to the best basketball college on the West Coast,
he states proudly. Damn straight.
I hate to tell you this, but if you don't change the way you handle conflict, you'll end up losing that big opportunity, too.
He admonishes, laying his burden out in full view and cutting me deep with it.
Now, I don't want to rain on your parade, but that's just the facts. You've got to put your ego aside along with that damned temper of yours and start making friends. You want to lead? Well, then act like someone who people want to follow, not stay clear from.
He ends poignantly. You done? I ask sharply, adding to his frustration. Dad runs his tattooed fingers through his curly mane, his skull and crown rings glistening off the reflections of the neon lights from the sign across the street. It makes him look even meaner from an outsider's point of view. But to me, he looks like a father who is genuinely worried about his daughter's future.
I want you to promise me that you'll at least think about what I've said. You have such a bright future ahead of you. I want to see you shine like the shooting star you are, rather than plummeting to the ground like everyone is betting on. Promise me at least that you'll try, Spencer. Can you promise me that?
He pleads sullenly, breaking my heart for being the cause of such anguish. Yeah, Dad. I promise. I vow sincerely, hoping it's enough to lift the heavy boulder off his shoulders. Maybe he's right. Maybe they're all right. My coaches, trainers, and everyone else who ever told me I needed to check my sensitive ego at the door if I wanted to make it in basketball. Maybe it is time for a change. What I've been doing so far hasn't been working to my benefit, that's for damn sure. And at USC, I have to give it my all. I can't blow this chance. If my father thinks that playing nice and making friends will get me what I want, then it will all be worth it in the end. I owe myself that much. I owe my dad that much.
Good. I love you so much, Spence. This is your big shot,
he says, laying his arms on the table, offering me his hands. I clutch onto them instantly, like I've done since I was little. We clasp our hands together, making 2 fists, arms entwined around the other. It marks our combined strength, the eternal bond of father and daughter. Our reminder that together we are unbreakable and unstoppable, because we've got each other. For a friendless girl whose mom couldn't give a shit about her, having one parent who would take on the world on her behalf is everything. Yeah, I know, I answer, hiding the emotions bubbling inside me.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
He smiles in earnest.
So, don't fuck it up, yeah?
I won't. Promise.
Chapter 1. Zeke. Ring, ring, ring. Bang, bang, bang. The fuck? Ring, ring, ring. Bang, bang, bang. I put the pillow over my head trying to block out whoever is trying to knock on our door this early in the day. It's probably one of Leo's latest conquests, so he should be the one dealing with the aftermath of his late-night booty call. However, this one seems more insistent than his usual brand of stalkers. We haven't been back at school for more than a couple of days, and the crazies have already crawled out of the woodwork to be all over his ass. Still, it's better their attention be focused on him than on me. He loves the attention anyway, even if it's from girls who only have dollar signs in their greedy eyes when they look at him. Luckily, my constant scowl keeps most of those would-be gold diggers far away from my dick or any other body part they want to linger on. As long as Leo double bags his dick, I don't care what he does with those psycho bitches. I do, however, care if those said lunatics pounce on our door and prevent me from getting any sleep on a Sunday morning. Ring, ring, ring. Bang, bang, bang. Can't one of you fuckers get the fucking door? I yell out in exasperation. The assholes know this is the only day I can sleep past 8. Every other day, I'm up before the crack of dawn, so sleeping in on Sunday is as sacred as going to Mass. It's my own form of giving thanks and worshipping my temple. So whoever is banging at our door is succeeding in disturbing my peace and getting in the way of my fucking sainthood. I grab my phone from the bedside table and see that it's only 7:15. If I'm forced to get up now, the person on the other side of that door is going to die. I'll make sure of it. Ring, ring, ring. Bang, bang, bang. Fuck this. I throw the covers off me and jump out of bed, determined to give this stalker banging furiously at our door a piece of my mind. Afterward, I'll have a word with Leo about his psycho jersey chasers and set some fucking boundaries. As I pass our hallway, I hear the shower running from Leo's room, which means the asshole was definitely expecting this early morning hookup. I don't hear Dre's soft snoring when I pass by his door, leading me to believe he's probably on the track doing laps, which would be the only reason that he didn't get up to deal with this annoying bullshit for me. Ring, 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 bang, bang, bang. Oh, fucker, you are so going to get it. Fuming, I open the front door with such force that it's a miracle it didn't come off its hinges. I'm still boiling with anger, ready to unleash all my wrath on Leo's new flavor of the week, when I come face to face with a kid dressed in a hoodie and sweatpants and with the deepest silver eyes I have ever seen in my life. The wide-eyed girl looks up at me in awe, and for a split second, she's lost all capacity of speech, much like I seem to have. She shakes the starstruck astonishment out of her system, placing both of her small hands on her hips. "What the hell are you doing here?" she asks, those gray, soulful eyes growing wider by the second. I give the kid a smirk for her sass. Think that's my line, kid. I cross my arms over my bare chest and lean against my door. I rub my lower lip with my thumb and take in this girl's appearance more fully. At first glance, I would have pegged her as just another college guy, but her voice is far too feminine to be a dude's, not to mention those damn eyes of hers, seductive and feline and undeniably all woman. Yet they also hold a tinge of something I see in mine every day I look in the mirror. Hunger for victory. Even if she is hiding her figure behind generic sportswear, there is no mistaking the kid has the soft curves of a woman under all that drab. "I'm not a kid," she finally retorts when she's found her voice again. "You sure look like one to me, and an annoying one at that. You woke me up, kid. What do you want? Make it quick because I want to go back to sleep. Something you interrupted, I might add." "Big guy like you needs beauty sleep, huh? Sorry to burst your bubble, but I don't think any bed rest will improve your mug any further," she replies, annoyed. Good thing I'm not in the market to please anyone but myself. I quit back as I start to close the door on her. "Wait, wait!" she shouts, placing her hand on the door before I can close it shut. "You've got 60 seconds, kid. Then I'm going back to bed." I fake a yawn. "You sure are a bundle of sunshine in the morning, aren't you?" she sasses again. 50 seconds. I look at my watchless wrist. "Shit. Okay, I started this off wrong. My name is Spencer, Spencer Clark. I just got here to USC this morning, and I'm looking for my dorm room. I was given this address. This is the McLeod building, right? Apartment 18? It's written right here on my housing email info. See?" She holds up the piece of paper in my face so I can read it. I give it a quick glance and see my address perfectly typed out in black and white, but it still doesn't mean jack to me. I nod anyway, hoping it'll get her off my doorstep sooner rather than later. 20 seconds, I tell her, instead of trying to help her with whatever drama she's got going on. "But that doesn't make sense. I mean, you live here too, right?" I nod again, my gaze falling on the two large duffel bags she has on the floor behind her. I wouldn't be surprised if she had a bunch more stuff outside in a car somewhere. "Yeah, this isn't going to happen. Kid, your 60 seconds are up." "What? What does that even mean?" She rebukes with her brows pinched together, exasperated that I'm more interested in getting back to bed rather than being concerned with solving her current dilemma. "It means that I'm going back to sleep." "Just answer one question, will you? Am I your new roommate or not, asshole? She throws out at me with a severe punching glare. Not. You got the wrong house, kid. I tell her before fully slamming the door in her pretty little face. Yeah, not in a million years would I let a girl like that live under my roof. My head must be focused on one thing and one thing only. The game. That is all I care about. And even if this kid wore all the boy clothes in the world, I would still get lost looking at those silver pools she has for eyes. She'd be a distraction, and I don't do distractions. Maybe there was a mistake, and that email she showed me was complete bullshit. Just another stalker trying to get to Leo and me in a more creative way than usual. Although, truth be told, I do remember Dre saying something about a new freshman coming to take Ralph's old room since he graduated last year. But he didn't say anything about it being a chick. Yeah, that's not happening. Again, not in a million years. And definitely never that kid. Those eyes had trouble written all over them. And I don't do trouble. Not if I want to survive.
Chapter 2. Spencer. I stand rooted to my spot, staring daggers at the closed door in front of me, mouth agape and, well, pretty fucking furious. Did Zeke Masterson, USC star basketball player, just slam the door in my face? That motherfu- I unclench my jaw and slam my fist repeatedly on the door. When that doesn't get the arrogant asshole's attention, I switch to kicking it with all my might. But the talented shooting guard doesn't return, no matter how much noise I make. His next-door neighbor, however, isn't as unaffected by the racket I'm making.
"Can you keep it down? Some of us need to sleep!"
A pissed-off, red-haired jock from two doors down orders. If he thought his reprimand would slow me down in any way, he's in for a rude awakening. Literally. Does this shithead really think I'm banging on this door at 7 a.m. on a godforsaken Sunday morning for the hell of it? For fucking kicks? Do I look like a crazy person? Don't answer that, Spencer. The pissed-off jock's constant scolding for me to take a hike and let the building sleep only serves to infuriate me further. I turn my back to the door and slam my heel on it so hard, it's a wonder my Jordans don't leave a big fat hole in it. I do this repeatedly, all the while eyeballing the dude from down the hall who can't stop giving me attitude.
"Hey, asshole, I said keep the noise down!"
"Fuck off!" I retort with a snarl, never quitting my incessant assault.
"Why, you little shit!"
the guy barks out, rushing over toward me. I'm so focused on having to deal with yet another jerk all up in my face, I don't realize that the door behind me has suddenly burst open. It's only when I fall, ass first inside, does the painful fact register. I blink twice, rubbing my backside while staring up at the recognizable stranger looming over me in nothing but a towel wrapped around his waist and a devilish smile branded on his lips. He might not be the same guy who I vowed to hate for all eternity, but he's just as impressive. Leo Maravich tilts his dark blonde head to the side in curiosity, his cocky smirk never wavering as he continues to look down at me.
"Are you the little thing making all this noise, Pitt?"
His British accent is thick and heavy, just like the air I'm trying to get back into my lungs from the shock of meeting one of the best centers that college basketball has seen in decades. Droplets of water run down his perfect, bare chest, bypassing his impressive, rock-hard abs. But it's his slanted smile that has me swallowing dryly. He uses the same one when he toys with his adversaries, blocking every move they try to do on the court. It's the self-assured grin of a true legend in the making. And he isn't shy in letting the world know he's well aware of what he brings to the table. Leo extends his hand down at me, which I absent-mindedly take so he can help me back up onto my feet. He clasps his other hand over mine, and unlike the rough and calloused skin I'd expect from someone who spends most of his time with a ball in his hands, Leo's warm palms are as smooth as a newborn baby's behind. His clear, blue eyes sparkle with mirth, amusement edged in their shine, no doubt reading the dim-witted nonsense going through my mind. Once my sanity finally makes an appearance and extinguishes the starstruck
Sample complete. Ready to continue?